strong. One that's sweet, one that's tough. One daddy ain't enough for me. One man just ain't enough. All you boys mark my words. One daddy ain't enough.
What do you need?
One who holds the doors open.
What do you need?
One who never knocks for coming.
What do you need?
One who'll always pay for dinner. And I need one who'll make me come running when he clicks his heels.
What do you need?
One who goes out every night.
What do you need?
One who'll always say goodnight.
What do you need?
One who never puts up a fight. And I need one I'll always find ready when I draw the blind. For me, one man just ain't enough. I need more than one to keep me strong. One that's sweet, one that's tough. One daddy ain't enough for me. One man just ain't enough. All you boys mark my words. One daddy ain't enough. One who'll always come and keep my horse a-jumping.
What do you need?
One who'll always catch my check.
What do you need?
To pay for all my shopping trips.
What do you need?
To keep me rolling in the day. And I need one big and strong to love me till I'm old and gray. For me, one man just ain't enough. I need more than one to keep me strong. One that's sweet, one that's tough. One daddy ain't enough for me. One man just ain't enough. All you boys mark my words. One daddy ain't enough.
You write to me and say you're moving to Spain, you're headed for the Mediterranean. Oh, and you say that you feel drained. I took it all away like a selfish piece of work. I'm such a selfish piece of work. So I write and say, are you feeling okay now? Can I come around? I know I did a lot of taking. I've been doing lots of thinking. I think it's time I come around. So come on, open fire on me. Open the door. This time I will give you more. A woman for my man in any consequence. And now love is wanna speak freely at any expense. Now a woman's got to feel her body is her own and nothing less. And a man has got to trust his woman's love is number one. never have I been so sure. Oh, never have I felt so adored without deserving it. And oh, will you let me go so I can know you once more? Selfish piece of work, I'm such a selfish piece of work. Oh Lord, it's true. So I write and say, are you feeling okay? Can I come around? I know I did a lot of taking, I've been doing lots of thinking. I think it's time you come around. So come on over.
Dr. Rock's radio show. Every Thursday night at 9 on raconteursnews.com. We go to 11.
good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on raconteursnews.com. Actually, I suppose technically it's a bit of an alter ego tonight, really, because it should be called Dr. Country's radio show, and Dr. Rock's been given five bob and sent off to go and hire himself a copy of Eat the Rich or something, because we're going to be sticking with the lighter side of the music, I think, tonight, and all of it will be by bands that we've seen over the weekend at Fire in the Mountain. So we kicked off with a now well-known Dr. Rock favourite, Screaming Miss Jackson and the Slap Your Mama Big Band, and they were playing a tune which I can't quite see on there because they've got such a big name that and I can't remember because I'm not concentrating. And it was One Daddy, it was called, and it's off their new album, I Heard the Voice of a Donut. And yes, they really are that crazy. I suspect they might even have actually heard the voice of a donut. They were followed by the lovely voice of Nuala Honan doing a song called Spain off her album The Tortoise. She was there last year. Both those lots were there last year as well, as were the Buffalo Skinners doing the debut track on their first album, which is really kicks off, doesn't it? So one of the things I must say about all of this music, if it hadn't been for Fire in the Mountain and for my synchronicitous introduction to it, I might never have actually started listening to bluegrass, country music, gypsy swing and all that kind of stuff. It was purely as a result of these series of accidental encounters that I developed any interest in it at all. And as it is, as you can hear, there's loads of really cracking stuff. You have to excuse me a moment. I do have a bit of a toothache, so I'm going to have to be supping on water fairly regularly, unfortunately, because I'm probably going to be talking quite a lot too. What I normally do when I go to Fire in the Mountain is I get to spend quite a lot of time watching the bands and catching the occasional collaborative conversation with people like security and the recyclers, which I didn't really manage to do this year, because for the first time we were a bit more central to one of the arenas, and partly as a result of that and partly because it just did seem, even by its own supreme standards, to be an extremely friendly festival. You know, it was I was so busy chatting with people and supping beer that was a bit difficult to do all of that stuff. And the wee bit of it that I did do got chewed up, I think, on a dodgy SDA card. So did a bit of stuff there, and then you know how it is when you go to use it, it doesn't actually work. But I do have a chat later on in the show with some old friends of Dr. Rock, really, now. We met up there with Steve Jones of the Permaculture Design Project. He's Sector 39 is his website. And we met up with Ollie of the Roots Project and Andrea of Crafternoons fame. And they've all been having a lovely time. It was their first visit there. So there'll be a chat, a recorded chat with them later on with the famous Dr. Rock Festival background soundtrack. But one of the things I want to do is, if I just put this into the chat box, I've got a slideshow of pictures which has been carefully slimmed down by Tony. Thank you very much for doing that, Tony. He reduced it from a 20 megabyte file to 5 meg, so it should be pretty easy for you all to get at. So I've bunged the link for it into the chat box. For those of you that are listening on the podcast or not in the chat box, and I know there's a fair few of you, because funnily enough, we get a few statistics off this particular station. But if you put in internet radio, all one word, .dr-rock.biz /download/fitm.2016.pdf, then you will get there. I think perhaps there was another link for that as well, but anybody has any problem, I'll say it again a little bit later on perhaps, but there's a fair few slides there, because what I want to do is give you a bit of a guided tour of the place, really, and it'll be of different places in the festival from previous shows, partly because the places themselves have changed, and partly because I didn't make it all the way around the site this year. So what I'll do is, whilst you download that, even though it's only a few megabytes, I want to have the excuse to play a bit of extra music this time round. And this is really great. This is another regular at Fire in the Mountain. It's not quite like all the other music that's played there, because it's not quite like any other music at all. He's a bit of a favourite at the festival, I think. And this one comes out with an F-bomb alert. Sensitive ears or people that are easily offended should listen away now, because this is Mick Artistic's Ego Trip and Wallet in My Pocket. And then we'll come back and look at some pictures and see where we've been. Here you go, folks. Artistic's Ego Trip, Wallet in My Pocket. Cracking, eh? He really is a very, very unique performer. Anyway, to tonight's show. One of the reasons why I really like to talk about festivals is, since I started working at them rather than paying to get into them, which must have happened probably 10 or 15 years or so ago now, I've been having such a cracking time. Many of you have been keeping track of my doings over the years as we've worked our way through things like the Tribal Love Cooperative and the Truth Juice Gathering and the Sunrise Festival and the Green Gathering. And they're all really different from each other. And although these small festivals are different from each other, they share a kind of difference from the workaday world that we're possibly used to. Well, most of us definitely used to being in that the end aim, mostly, of the ones that I've been to has not been to make a profit, which is just as well, because it's actually bloody difficult making a profit running a small festival. I think it's probably a lot easier to make one if they're the kind of corporate ones that, as many of you know, I abandoned several years ago. But what happens at these gigs is that lots and lots of people bring all the kind of rigs that are necessary to do the stuff that needs to be done, and that means kind of feeding people and entertaining them and, you know, laying all the electrics in and making all the stages and, in most cases, hardly any of the infrastructure that appears over the space of 2 or 3 days is actually there again within a couple of days of the festival. And it's done, I think, in the old-style desire to put on a show, put on a party, to get together and to entertain each other. And the thing is, when that's the primary aim, that itself is enough to make a difference in the feeling of the gig from the world that we're used to, because, of course, mostly what the world we're used to is trying to do is make money and encourage us to make money. And it always amazes me just exactly what people can do when they put their minds to it and they when they work together. I think, well, I know for sure the Fire in the Mountain is definitely a special case where this comes in, and I think it's something we'll hear more about a little bit later. But it's not organised the same way as most things are. And those people who are at the cutting edge of management research will be aware that there are certain models arising now where you have a completely flat management structure. What might be called a holarchy is the word for it, I think. And in these systems, everybody that's involved in making decisions has access to all of the information necessary. So one of the big changes in Fire in the Mountain, and I have seen it over the years, I've really, really enjoyed watching it meet the challenges of one year and have them sorted by the next, only obviously to be met by new challenges, as we'll hear. But the response of the kind of core team to the level of work involved in actually putting on a show of this kind of scale can be quite stressful. In fact, I think in my experience often is for some people, and that can really detract from your ability to enjoy the party that you put it spending so much time and effort into putting on. You know, it's quite a commitment, a lot of time and energy and communication, all of which itself is really entertaining and fun, but the whole thing then kind of appears and disappears in 5 days. And as a result of being able to see kind of everything that's going on, it's possible for people to talk to each other and to work things out between us, which I suspect is the way nature does things. You know, there's as things travel up and down a hierarchy, there's kind of Chinese whispers, and original requests for a design become something that's completely impractical by the time it's worked its way up to engineering and then back out again through health and safety or whatever. And to be able to actually talk to the people you need to talk to and not really bother anybody else with it is one of the fundamental parts of the gig, I think. Anyway, it's my suspicion that one of the reasons, possibly even the main reason, that Fire in the Mountain is such a special place to be is because of this kind of democratized information and management system. And I'm not the only one. I'm definitely sure I'm not the only one. If you were to be able to round up a few people that were at the Fire in the Mountain this year, I think you'd get pretty much the same story from everybody, which of course is one of the reasons why I had such a good time, was because everybody else around me was. And sort of brings to mind that, do you remember the old Bruce Lipton experiment when he was working on stem cells in, well, it was way back, wasn't it, late 60s? And he discovered that you could get a load of identical cells and you could put them in a petri dish with a disadvantageous environment. You could make sure they didn't have all of the food and nutrients they needed and things like that. And they would, of course, become sick and they wouldn't kind of grow and all of that. But he subsequently discovered you could take those same cells and put them in a richer environment, in a supportive environment where they had absolutely everything they needed. And in no time at all, they were shining examples of cells once again. So our environment's really important to us. And I think that many of the tricks that are being learnt, many of the interactions, many of the skills, many of the ability to, to try and plan stress out of the situation and stuff, is going to be really useful to us all. And I think that Fire in the Mountain is not only its own thing, I think it is actually an arising of something that's coming into human consciousness now, which is a completely different way of running things. And it seems to me that it is much more collegiate, we might even call it, I'm tempted to use the word tribal, because we need to be doing something different, and there was some of that at Fire in the Mountain as well. So I'm going to have a look at this slideshow that I put together for you to have a quick look at. Just to remind those of you who didn't catch it first time round, the web link for it is internetradio.dr-rock.biz/download/fitm.2016.pdf. And I will find a way of actually making that a lot quicker, because it takes a long time to get through it. It's called Fire in the Mountain, Tan and Amunith 2016, because it is 2016, apparently, so we're told. And Tan and Amunith is, of course, the Cymraeg for Fire in the Mountain. And it kicks off with one of the areas. The festival's kind of broadly divided into a kind of a camping area which runs up a slope into the main kind of field area, where there's places where you can get food and some stalls and the Tools for a Future guys, Tools for Self-Reliance, who recondition old tools and send them out to foreign parts but also make them available here, which is a really great idea, because frankly most of the steel in the modern tools is no good at all, and the tools these guys sell are really, really business-like. There's quite a lot of things going on in there. There was a family area as well. Permaculture guys were up there, and natural building. And there's a courtyard, which we'll see photographs of. And just outside the courtyard, there's this kind of main communal area, which is what's shown in this first slide. This is actually just in front of a place called the Crab and Bap, who turned up with their own dinghies for people to sit in the sunshine, which was unremitting, I'm happy to say, for the whole gig. You can see there's a little mound behind the people in the boat, and on the other side of the mound is our kind of main fire circle and dragon area, which is where we meet when we're putting the festival together and things. We meet there, everything stops for midday meal, and we all meet there, and it's a really great way of catching up on anything that needs to be caught up on. And it seems to me to be a good way of sorting out what few glitches there were that were arising, beyond, of course, glitches that were arising with the outside world, such as telecoms companies and stuff, but they just have to be dealt with in your stride. The second slide, family camping area on arrival. You can see Dr. Rock and Synchro's van sitting there on the edge of our lovely 4-meter bell tent. We've been scabbling our way along on tents for 20 years or so, but spending as much time in the field as we do and getting older, it's necessary to be able to stand upright to put your trousers on and stuff like that. And it's a view up the hill to where the main festival area is going to be, and you can see all the buttercups. The land was beautiful. I think it has horses on it mostly, and out of my little bedroom window I could see, a bedroom window height, buttercups and daisies and clovers and really beautiful kind of sward. Skipped one there. The third one is a view looking down at our tent, down in the back right hand corner. We decided to move out of the crew camping this year and go to somewhere that was going to be really peaceful, as indeed the family camping was. And you can see how much space there is. A couple of portaloos. This was a couple of days before people arrived. I think we got there on the Tuesday. The fourth slide, view from the hill 2 days on. That's looking down towards our tent in the far, far corner of that field. And this huge variety of tents that sprouted in between. Fire in the Mountain, people seem to me like to arrive by the Thursday night. By the way, my apologies for not turning up. We thought we had it all kind of sorted to do a radio show live actually from the festival, which would be a first. And we had a kind of separate router lined up outside, beyond the operations centre, because you can never quite tell what's going to happen in there and when it's going to be needed. But unfortunately, in the end, it didn't quite work. As it was for us, that was a really great thing, because the festival came together really, really peacefully, and by about 9:30, I'd say, it was all humming along nicely. People were starting to make coffee. There was kind of as there always are at Fire in the Mountain, various clusters of people turning out, really cracking acoustic music of one sort or another. And the thing just seemed to sparkle into life, if you like, on the Thursday, even though its official kind of start time isn't till midday on the Friday. Number five, Chico, Cymru's favourite donkey, and the family. I saw he was a late arrival, and I think he's something of a superstar around the place. Apparently these people walked 1,000 miles around Wales with Chico, and had a marvellous time doing it, but they've now got a little baby, and you can see there they're camping in a wee enclosure with Chico the donkey, who was, I must say, incredibly friendly and soft. Here we go. This is the next one, frame number six. Picture number six, I think, is really amazing. This is this was the state of the building when we arrived on the Tuesday afternoon, and it's a timber framed building that I think has been designed. I didn't get a chance to check, but I believe it's been designed by people associated with Fire in the Mountain, probably arising from our own needs, I would think, because it was taking us a very long time to put up. Well, us, it was taking the build crew a very long time to put up some of the really complex things that we were using in the early years. And this particular structure, the timber frame stage, was last year a really huge tent called Owl's World, full of settees, a great place to be. As it turns out, this is a really worthy replacement to Owl's World, I think. I love the shadows on the ground. I think the next shot's one of those as well. Yeah, this is a picture of the same building, but from the end. You can see that it's pretty large, actually. That's one of the great things about Fire in the Mountain, is that there's plenty of places to be. So you're never kind of overcrowded in any one place. Though it can sometimes, it gets really kicking. You never kind of feel like you're being, you never feel like you're being swallowed in a wave of humanity. Number eight is a picture of the field stage that we saw being assembled in the previous shot. You can see that it's getting a lot ready now. Apparently, this material that they've got on it is man-made, but is designed to mimic the best features of man-made and artificial canvases. It did certainly look very light, and it's all kind of zipped into place over those metal struts. And then you can see they get this kind of extension off the left-hand side of it by taking the canvas out further onto another set of poles. And they also get an extension where they can put the stage. And as it says in the helpful little caption at the top, behind us is going to be a bar, which is always a good way to go, I reckon. Music at one end and a bar at the other. And you can also see down on the right, in about the middle of the picture, there's some little bees that somebody's made, and they later turn up hanging from the rafters and lit from within. Another of the things that I really like about these places is it is an opportunity for people to freely express their creativity, which, again, is a thing which is sadly missing from most of our everyday lives, though not all of us by any means. Number nine shows the field stage up and running, the bars at the other end, and there you go. You can see one of the glowing bees up there in the top left of the picture. People are clearly having a wicked time there. Not quite sure who's playing. As I say, I wasn't paying a lot of attention this year. I did see plenty of bands, but most of the ones that I saw either hadn't released a CD or had sold out or whatever, so that's why I didn't manage to grab a lot of new music, because it's normally a very rich source, Fire in the Mountain. You normally come back with a little pile of new stuff. Number 10, track 10. Slide 10 shows another of the main areas. A lot of stuff goes on in here. It's still in the build stage here. This is what it looked like on the Wednesday, and the festival kind of starts kicking off Thursday lunchtime. You can see what a lovely old place it is, and it's a not-for-profit community venture. So it's although some people are endeavouring to earn money by being here, the actual structure and loads of the way it's all supported and run and put together and take apart are voluntary. And any money that is made, which I think might have happened on occasions, but it's, like I say, it's a very hard thing to do, is put into improving the farm, because an old farm like this needs maintenance. And so things like roofs have been done and places have been tidied up and all manner of things have been generally built and repaired. And it means that the festival can take advantage of it. But when the festival's not there, apart from, I suspect, a whole load of storage, there must be a lot of storage, is a farm again with horses on it. And this is the main place where people dance. You can see there's a wall at the back there, and with an opening behind it with a circle over the top. That's where the bar is. And in the building to the left, there's a speakeasy, which I went into, because the bar basically deals in cider and beer, and lots of it. Lots of really high-quality cider and beer. But if you really want some kicking DJ music and all that, and some hard liquor, don't know about the fast women, they didn't have them on the sign. But you can go in there, and what's really strange about that is kind of the first time in 5 years that I went in there when it was operating. And you sort of don't notice it from outside. It's really pulsing and modern and beaty kind of in there. but from outside it doesn't appear to impinge on the straw raising chicken kicking music that's going on. So anyway, there you go, you can see that a lot of things are being built from scratch, loads and loads of timber work's done, and personally I'd really like to get involved in some of that because I'd like to learn more about how to use timber effectively. Next one, number 11, is the courtyard stage. It's built, as far as I can tell, in a similar way to the one that we saw in the field, but what a beautiful shape that is. It's, again, a real mixture, as far as I can tell, as I was told, of old techniques and new materials. So it's kind of, it's pinned together wooden frame, and it all arrives flat-packed. And it's held together in each of the places where one piece of wood goes through another with three steel pins, which I suppose, because there's three of them, and I suppose because they're steel, are going to be easy to knock in and out. So this is actually something which I think's arisen from fire in the mountain that can be kind of put on a lorry and dragged to other places and used there. And as well as being beautiful, it did seem to go up quite quickly. I suspect the team knew it really well. But I want to look at it. I wonder if it might not be as quick, maybe quicker, as some of the modern stage rigs that I've seen. And it's certainly quite substantial. And the big pile of stone in the front of it is, of course, for dancing on. Number 12 is another view of the stage, now ready for the lights and music. It's got the stage on it, and it's got the boards on it to stop people going to sleep underneath. And slide 13 is Screaming Miss Jackson, who we heard from at the beginning of the show, on the stage and having a really great time. We really like Screaming Miss Jackson. I think that they got the Dr. Rock team's vote for band of the festival this year. And there's another one of Screaming Miss Jackson with no caption. And you can see the stage is really beautiful and simple, but it works really well. I think the band's really loved it. Number 15 is what was happening whilst in the actual courtyard itself, whilst Screaming Miss Jackson were on. Clearly you can see the people were enjoying them, and lots of free dancing. Really great. And, you know, people are not out of their trees. They're just having a really cracking time. And this music, it sounds so, I mean, it's really kicking on the CDs, isn't it? I can see from the response in the chat room that there's many people who really like it. But compared with what it's like when it's live, it's the CD is nothing. It's amazing how different it is. On the digital audio on the laptop, the live music is just completely infectious and very difficult to resist. And of course, because it is what it is, you don't actually need to know it very well to be able to dance to it. And as you can see, there's people of all ages there, raising straw in the courtyard. And just at the back of the courtyard there, you can see there's a white building. It's actually got a sign on it this year which says Food Hall on it. It used to say food in giant Scrabble letters on it. And the next shot is Food Central. That's it, really. Incredibly well organised, I think. Really brilliant food coming out of it. As far as I gather, it was inside its budget and feeding lots of people regularly. And it's not easy, you know, making big pots of food and making it tasty and keeping all of its body. And I had loads of really good stuff out of there. This is the place that the crew's fed from as well before the festival actually starts. Because there's sort of somewhere over 1,000 people once we kick off. There's more food available outside, but I suspect that by far the majority of it comes out of here. Really grateful to those people, and that was one of the biggest challenges, I think, because we wanted to make it was wanted at the beginning of the festival to have some form of communal eating if we could, and that's a very challenging thing to do. And one of the places where the years of experience have really paid off is in here, I think. Absolutely bloody marvellous, really. Because, again, that's important, you know. If you're going to be out partying into the early hours of the morning and giving of your best during the day and whatever, you need to be properly fed, don't you? Otherwise things can become confusing. Number 17 shows another place where I scored quite a lot of food. And it's called the Crab and Bap. And the sign says, a social enterprise bringing you a connection between food and people. We support adults with additional needs to gain valuable work experience in a real festival setting. We aim to break the barriers stopping us from living in an equal society. We support real work with real experiences. And they were a lovely bunch of blokes in there. Worked really, really hard. And there are actually several. There was a place selling hemp products and hemp food and nutrition. that was a similar story. There was quite a lot of not-for-profit social enterprises in there doing their thing. So another main element, I think, that separates Fire in the Mountain from the others is that the commercial is very close to the crew, in the sense that they're either similarly socially minded people or are enterprises that have developed from the history and the activities of Fire in the Mountain itself. Next one is The Dragon. Said that Over the Bank was our main area with the fire pit and everything. And this is where it is. This is a look into what was, I think, probably an orchard once. And you can see the dragon's head there in the foreground with the little girl in pink standing on top of it. Great little picture. And you can actually light a fire in the dragon just there and smoke comes out of its nose. And the idea is that its body is made up of the bank, which curves all the way around the fire pit. And then right around the other end, it turns into some stones. And there's a stage on the lawn as well there, number 19. This is one of about three stages, I think. This used to be a gramophone stage. We used to have a stage here that was kind of shaped like a gramophone, and people could stand on it. But it did a few years, but I gather it wasn't resuscitatable this year. So we got a new one, and this is, you can see lots of different people here. Saw storytellers, both telling stories and singing songs, and folk sometimes that have performed on the main stage come and played here on another day. It is one of the nicest places to be, especially in the sunshine, which I'm sure I mentioned we had for the whole festival and for the take up and take down. So plenty of room. In fact, we were looking for shade, and as you could see from the dragon photo previously, there's a nice big tree there that gives us lots of shade. Number 20 is a different sort of venue. This is I was intrigued by what this was going to become, and it turned out that it's a place where a load of friends of mine were going to camp, because this time for the first year we had a permacultural presence and they were coming along to give of their wisdom, really. And also I think it was peculiarly their kind of gig. They hadn't been before, but because permaculture isn't only, as we know, about growing food and horticulture and all of that, it's also about culture. It's about how we live together. Then there's obviously clearly room probably to learn from each other, I would have thought. So that's what their venue looked like right at the beginning on the Tuesday when we arrived. And the next one shows what it was like, some of it anyway, when it was fully up. And in the shot we can see Hassan and Dave, don't know who the young lady is, and they were there talking about natural building and natural building materials. And it was a wicked talk. It was really great. They've done an awful lot of straw bale building and building with other sorts, but straw bales was what they were particularly interested in. Some things really, really quite big. Other things really small and bijou, but they pointed out that every single one of these buildings, more or less, was providing its own special challenges. And with their slides and their knowledge and experience, they were putting across so much interesting stuff. Unfortunately, I couldn't stay there till the end because I had other things to do. Hassan, we'd met before. This is another great thing about Fire in the Mountain, is that as the years go by, people turn up from all over the place. And Hassan, we spent a weekend working in some woodland, building a thermal mass rocket stove, which was shaped like a dragon. Anyway, these guys, they did a really great talk. Katie Creone was in there as well, who has been on the show before, talking about her shamanic and healing work and about ceremony. But she's currently involved with the Incredible Edible in Wrexham and is working towards getting land with, I think, a couple of dozen, 25 or 30 people. But they're unusual in that they're building their community before they get their land, like, so they're kind of getting together and running programs and doing the Incredible Edible and growing food and planting things on council land, and generally getting used to each other and getting used to working with each other, and obviously giving themselves the opportunity of progressing their cooperative desires at the same time as actually, you know, doing the work on the ground. So I found that a very enlivening place, and we'll have a chat with some of the people that were in there later on. Slide 22, Craftanoons, two more friends of Dr. Rock Show, sitting at the back there. There's Andrea, who we met, I think, probably at the Conscious Tribal Gathering, and another lady we met there last year. And they've got all these amazing materials which they'll lay out, and people can come and play with them. Again, a really marvellous sunny afternoons activity. And they were just outside the permaculture tent there. And about opposite, there's a kind of family tent where lots and lots of children's activities were going on. Don't they look colourful? And don't people look like they're having a good time? See, you know, you won't ever see a scene like that on EastEnders. And it really was as lovely as it seems as well. It was just such a crack. It really was. 23, slide 23, we've moved to another part. If you go from where all of that activity was happening, there's a little track that runs down a hill past the old farmhouse and to a stream, after which the farm is named. But because Synchro's gone to Bolivia and isn't sitting here, I can't remember what the Welsh name of the place is. I've been going there for 5 years, I should remember it by now. There you go. And here it is, there's a crossing, there's a ford here, which you can get backwards and forwards on in vehicles if you want to, but they put in these great big wooden stepping stones. And on the other side of the stream, there's a completely insane camping field, which I have had photos of before, but you'll have to go to the podcast page for that. It's really crazy, totally, totally sloping camping field. All it's got is got one flat space that we put a 30-foot workshop yurt on, where there's gypsy swing improvisation classes and Appalachian flatfoot dancing and all manner of other things. Very inventive and actually entertaining place to be in itself. These guys, they turn up for a gypsy swing improvisation class or whatever, and you get 3 dozen people who clearly already know what they're doing and other people dancing to them. Very marvellous. But that's the only flat space in the field. Just exactly what it is that makes people want to camp in these big modern tents on a hugely sloping field, I don't know. I've tried it a few times myself, and you just end up asleep with your own feet at the bottom of the sleeping bag. So there it is, the river. So there's over the other side, there's the wild camping, there's the workshop yurt, there's a little healing area cafe, and a back route back to the family camping that goes right the way through some woodland, and it's really pretty. And down in the stream a little bit later on, caught this a bit later on, here you go, this is one of my favourite things about Fire in the Mountain. What have we got here? We've got 12 people standing in the stream, all with their instruments, including your double bass. And they must have been out there for 3/4 of an hour or an hour, just playing tunes. And I didn't include a picture which had a crowd of people, variously booted, standing on the wooden stepping stones we saw earlier and doing the Appalachian flatfoot dancing on it, which is really great because that adds a bit of a rhythm as well. It means if you haven't got any drums, you've got these people clamping their feet on the floor. But this is one of the things that's really good about Fire in the Mountain, is there are, as well as on the stages, there's just bands everywhere. When I came and discovered these people in the stream, I'd passed some people playing this really amazing swing music on the steps, and you just want to sit down in the shade and listen to so much of it and just enjoy the fact that, you know, a lot of these people probably haven't actually necessarily met before, and that they can just get together with these instruments and no amplifiers and no electricity and just turn out music that people want to dance to. So there's a bit of me that really wanted to just kind of sit there and listen to things like this. But yeah, the result of that is that you're always missing quite a lot of stuff here. There's always stuff going on everywhere, and loads of it's not programmed, which is great, isn't it? Not programmed. That's what we're after. For some reason, the next one, Dragon Fire Circle and Pizza Hut, has got itself out of position. That's a picture of the place when it hasn't got the people sitting in it. You can see behind the fireplace there, you can see the other side of the dragon's head. And in the distance on the other side of the lawn, you can see our Pizza Hut, which has got 2 stone-fired pizza cob ovens in it. Again, that took a while to get together. There was a lot of work went into it. And eventually, once we got that rather ethnic looking roof on it, it's all run really well. And that's a great place because you can get pizzas more or less all the time there. And you can see the main fire. It's tried to encourage to keep fires off the ground. So by and large, where there's 1 or 2 fires that people can come and sit around, apart from the bloody great big one that we have at the end, which is not, alas, possible to photograph. I've tried it before, but I'll talk about it maybe a bit Dragon Fire Circle and Pizza Hut. It's what it looks like when it's not full of people dancing to a band on the lawn stage. And you can see the bank, the Dragon's Bank, coming away from its head there. Oh, what a lovely place. I'd like to go back there right now, actually. Next one's really gorgeous. It's called Oaks Water and a Healing Space. And that's about as close as I got to the healing area this year. There's a view through the buttercups at it. You can see some children playing in the stream there. There were lots and lots of children at the show this year, which I think is a really amazing thing. And all, again, getting on with each other. There are lots of dogs as well, and all the dogs seem to be getting on with each other as well. I really do suspect that there's a kind of a vibe running here, which, you know, is very different, very different. Maybe approached by one or two places, but not quite like this. So that... The healing area had masseurs and various other people in it, and is in the middle of an oak grove. If you look carefully, you can see there's a circle of oak trees around that cluster of tents. And also running round the edge of the oak grove is the actual stream itself burbling away. I really did mean to go and get myself a deep tissue massage, because I love them. And festivals is about the only time I come across them, but there you go. Ah, that's a very pretty photo. Anyway, here we go. This is where we were, the next one, number 27. This is a tent just by the river, in fact, sitting right by where the band in the stream were playing. This is a 6-metre tent, red and white, red and green. Not red and green, get it right. 6-metre red and yellow tent that we had. It's the tent's first outing, and the people in there are the Master Chai people, because the festival forum shares with the Chai, so they're doing chai all day. And when we pack up at around 5 or 6 o'clock, they kind of they run a chai cafe playing amazing sounds and late into the evening, so that people can go and have one last chai before bed. And I have had some really good chais in my time, but this guy. Very, really nice. Drank loads and loads of chai. Probably kept me off the beer a bit, which is good. Actually, I do have a suspicion that if you drink enough of the chai, you probably get a bit of a hit off it. I didn't even ask him what was going in it, but it tasted really good. apart from the rugs on the floor, the chai people did all the decor as well. So we didn't have to do much work on that. And you can see how great the weather is. We've got more or less the entire tent open, which is exactly what I was hoping for, because... Bit tiny, maybe, for a chai cafe and a forum. And had it been raining, I think it would have been a bit cosy and damp in there. But as it was, we had the full access to the outside for the whole thing. Number 28, we're listening, is a picture of people in the forum. And we're listening to a man called Simon Ayres talking about rewilding the self. Contents of the forum were really interesting. Rewilding is also described as... uncivilizing, and all of the people we had in the forum had some very interesting ideas, actually, and ideas some of which are kind of akin to what we talk about on the radio, but lots of them I was new to, and I'm hoping that many of the people that we had talking to us in there, including Simon, will be willing to come on the show and have a bit of a chat at some point. But you can see people are pretty attentive in there. I really didn't know what to expect from the forum, being down where it is, a bit of away from the main festival and all the rest of it, because typically they gather a lot of passing trade if they're in a busier place. But we're actually on a crossroads here, so people have got to come. People come by to go over to the healing field, to the workshop yurt, or to the wild and crazy camping, and also come by to go to the sauna and... sauna and hot tub and showers that are all down there. And again, there's photos of those on earlier shows from previous years, but not this year. As it was, though, the forum was a pretty busy place to be. There were lots and lots of people came down, and as well as the presenters being really interesting and very original, there were lots and lots of really interesting people coming down asking questions and making points. You couldn't really have asked for it to turn out better. I mean, we had, what did we do? Got one of those somewhere. I thought I did. Just trying to see if I can spot. Never mind, I'll do that a bit later. Next picture, number 29, is a view of the outside of the forum. And what we did between 10 and 11 in the morning was a lady called Katerina came and did yoga with us. apart from on the first day when Katerina was unfortunately poorly. So thanks, Steph, for stepping in there. See, that was very popular as well. I think we were the only place with a bit of a yoga spot, but it always does go down well. And for some reason, it seems to be a good thing to have at the beginning of a forum day. I did do the yoga on the first day, but decided to hang out and take photos the second day round. But don't you think forum looks great? And yeah, clearly very popular. That next one is after the day, the forum basically ran from about 11 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, and so we had about 3 kind of 90-minute slots, and the idea was to encourage solution-based discussion, which I think we did pretty well at. But at 5 o'clock, we had some storytellers, and this is a small sample of them. You can see there's Jessa Brin, our very own synchro there, Rosie Bold, who also did a fabulous presentation in the forum, and Millie Jackdaw, who really fascinated the children. I'll tell you what, I've got to go in Millie's hat before the end. Next one, 31, is the Chai Master, Max, running his stall. And again, I think that I do remember seeing him actually on the second year of Fire in the Mountain. They had a kind of chai wagon that they moved around. And now we've got this space. We obviously have to get a bigger one next year, but he played really great sounds and made really great chai and was excellent to share a tent with. And it was one of my favourite places to go in the early hours of the morning as well, because I do like to be in bed early, and I do try it that way at festivals because it's hard to get up otherwise. But I failed miserably this year. I was kind of 2:30, 3 in the morning, and then trying to drag myself out at 7 o'clock. But one of the things that kept me out of bed was Chai Master's chai, I suspect, and the chill atmosphere in the place itself. Number 32 is Dr. Rock and Synchro. There they are, or Jess, as she's known, sitting there, hanging out outside. And that's me wearing a daft hat. I like that. don't think any Fire in the Mountain or festival thing would be finished without actually having a quick look at the recycling. Again, I'd really like to talk to the man who was running the recycling. Turns out that he does an internet radio show as well, so we'll try and catch up with him. Sounds like we've got a pretty similar ethos. This is something that I think is it's always kept at the back, sort of shoved round between the crew camping and the back of the bar and stuff, so it's more or less completely out of everybody's view. And there is a school of thought which says that it would be useful to have it somewhere where people can see it, because really everything is sorted by hand. It all goes onto this table, it all gets sorted out into various bags and bins, and then presumably shunted off to wherever it goes. I'd like to find out what's happening to it nowadays, because it's certainly not so much of a local thing as it was, as we have heard in earlier shows. But big team of people actually collecting the rubbish and picking through it bit by bit. You can't help thinking there must be a better way of doing it than this. I mean, not a better way of sorting the rubbish, a better way of making sure that we don't have it in the first place. I mean, Jess was telling me that on the trains in India, they used to serve all of the chai and stuff in little ceramic cups, so you could have your chai and then you just throw the cup out the window, and the cup's basically soil, isn't it? It's just when it rains or whatever, it's just gonna turn into ground. But now, of course, it's all plastic and stuff, and not the same thing happens if you chuck a plastic one out the window. I'm told that we've got kind of starch containers which would actually properly compost rather than just break down into tinier and tinier versions of themselves. I imagine it's possibly a bit more expensive than the polystyrene, or perhaps it's just that it doesn't get to sell more oil products. But every time I look at this, I just think it's so sad that we are making so much mess for ourselves, when I'm sure we're a little bit more ingenious than that. And this is the day after everybody went home. And the next shot, number 34, shows how much stuff they've still got to work through. I mean, to a certain extent, their busiest time comes after the festival. And there's another thing that happened this year, which I think was really good, is that there were people working after the festival, on the kind of Monday and Tuesday and stuff, who'd got a ticket to come to the festival on the basis that they were going to work afterwards, which I think is a really good idea, because quite often what happens is people just scoot off. Not a problem we suffer from too much. I think there were more people there on the Monday night this year than normally. I think there were sort of probably 70 or 80 people still there on the Monday night. And by then, a lot of stuff had been taken down and put away, though there was a bit of, I think, a bit of a challenge with the field stage. So that's one of the really great things as well, is the crew party. And at the very end of the show, there's 45 seconds or so of the crew singing and basically celebrating a successful gig. And I must admit, when I put it on there earlier on, it brought a tear to my eye. There have been times in the past when I come back from a production or, you know, something you put a lot of effort into and wondered what I'm going to do with myself now all the work's been done. And I haven't felt that for quite a long time, actually, but I definitely felt it coming back from this fire in the mountain. I just thought, it's such a shame I've got to wait for a year, another year, for another one of those. I mean, we got good stuff coming up and all that kind of stuff, but honestly, there isn't really, in my opinion, there isn't anything that comes close to Fire in the Mountain anyway, and especially Fire in the Mountain this year. And you think of all that stuff you've seen pictures of and how much effort goes on into organising it, making it happen, and, you know, to the people who are willing to pay the money to come along and take advantage of it. I really think we need to make ourselves a little bit better known so that we make sure that we sell all of the tickets we've got. And I'd like to... One of the reasons why I do this is because I'm aware that it's a really special experience that most people don't get. I mean, I'm aware that most people don't make it out to festivals. It seems like a pretty expensive outing and stuff, though I suspect that if you compare it with going abroad and things like that, it's probably a pretty cheap way of having fun, especially if you choose to do a bit of volunteering. And you can't beat working with people. I don't know how many people there are who haven't tried crewing at a festival, for example, because certainly once I tried it, I didn't want to stop, really. I suppose it's part of the shape of your mind, isn't it? I learn a lot from working with these people. I mean, they are so good at what they do. It would be impossible to kind of outline all of the skills that are used. But, you know, there's people wanting things all the time. And sometimes, especially when we get cracking, so on the Saturday morning, it can be a bit difficult to find people, because many of the crew have been gigging till 5 in the morning, and a lot of them have got children as well now. So there's periods when, if you're the one that's around, when whatever query arises, then you've got to come up with some way of dealing with it, really. And I was just amazing how gentle people are with each other. And as I said in the little blog for the show, I think that Fire in the Mountain is a real tribute to what human beings can do when they've actually got some kind of free rein. I mean, we're going to have to, there must be quite a lot of licensing and expense and all that kind of stuff involved in it, but it's just bloody marvellous, guys, it really is. And next year I shall make sure I make people aware of it soon enough. And, you know, you get food and a meal and a ticket, and I think the volunteers work something like 6 hours, 2 6-hour chunks and a 3-hour chunk, although it's a bit more in some places. But all the work just gets you to meet more people and keeps you in the heart of the festival. So the last one, another ton of money that's flowed by, 2016 the best yet, it says on top. And these are little weirs. When we first went to sleep in our tent, the river was making a kind of low, bassy sort of noise. Not a lot of noise, you know. It was, you could just kind of hear it flowing because it wasn't very far from the tent. And some youngsters came, and I remember I used to do this as well. They came and they gathered stones from the rivers and they built these little weirs in it. There's a row of three of them. And they really made a beautiful noise. They made the stream go really musical. I thought it was a dead good way of spending their time. And Synchro tells me that whilst they were doing it, they were singing We Will Rock You by Queen, with all the words and all the harmonies and everything, with each rock that they moved and working rhythmically. What a marvellous thing for your kids to be able to do in an afternoon. And as usual, as I say, everybody got on with everybody else. Nobody was particularly lunched out. Children got on with each other. Dogs got on with each other. The security... Great bunch of people, really great bunch of people, and really no cause for worry, I don't think, but you have to have those guys there, even if, you know, chances are, I guess, in this modern world, perhaps it would not be quite so a safe place to be if they were, but they were really, really gentle bunch, and as usual, as far as I'm aware, it was a more or less completely trouble-free gig, which, again, trouble-free, that's where we want to be, isn't it? And these little things... 3-4 years ago, I figured I couldn't afford to go to festivals anymore because I had too many other things to do. Having tried that for a while, I figured that I couldn't afford not to go to festivals anymore. And one of the reasons for that was because of the kind of blessed relief it is to deal with people creatively and cooperatively and with an open heart and in a place which is known to be safe. It shouldn't be such a luxury. It really shouldn't. It should be a lot more common than having to go away for like 3 or 4 days. We should be doing better. I really think we should. Anyway, those are the little pictures. I hope you enjoyed those. I obviously, whilst I was talking my way through that, I couldn't see what was going on in the chat box. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play some couple more tunes. They're all short tunes, these. They don't get much of a break playing this sort of music. Yes, absolutely great. This is one of the new ones I got. We got quite a lot of this. It's going to be... What are we going to do? Yes, we are. We're going to play the Foghorn String Band, and it's called Stillhouse, and it's about cider. And here we go. And that's followed by Heal the Last Stand and Smile, which says it all, I think. Says it absolutely all. Here you go. Back with you in about 5 minutes or so.
A name, a family somewhere. I wonder where you're going and if I'll know anyone who's there. If we're somehow connected on the outside as within, can we not forget our differences and let the love begin? Being good to people is as simple as a smile. That hopeful little moment when you catch somebody's eye. They can tell and you can see there's somewhere deep inside. We're all in this together, I hope you enjoy the ride. We're all in this together, I hope you enjoy the ride.
Heal the Last Stand and Smile There, one of my favourite songs, really uplifting tune, and again, made me feel a lot better when I played it earlier on this evening, as does seeing my mate Synchro in the chat box, calling in all the way from Peru. She's going to go and spend some time up around Lake Titicaca, doing some breathing practice and stuff, and I'm sure there's going to be some pictures. Hey, there we go. Long journey, but hassle-free. Well, have a good one, Synchro. It's really, really good to see you in the chat, mate. And very different from Fire in the Mountain, eh? From Fire in the Mountain to Cusco via Aberystwyth and Madrid, I believe. How exotic is that? And she'll be back in time to slope on into the Conscious Tribal Gathering. Excellent stuff. Normally a lot of interesting stuff happens to me when Synchro's away as well. And then we have a great time chatting about it when she gets back. So there you go, the Foghorn String Band and Heal the Last Stand. And now what I'd like to do is, we haven't had one of these for a while because it's been the quiet time of the year. I'm pretty sure I loaded it up. Yes, I did. One of the things we did a lot of in the early days of the show was recording interviews with people that we met at festivals, because we were working specifically in arenas that dealt with legal, lawful aspects, mortgages, all sorts of things. Slowly but surely we worked in places that were to do with earth energies and the like, and so there's always interesting people to talk to. Normally I have a bit more time for recording this kind of thing. Like I say, there wasn't a lot of time for it this time, and some of the stuff I did gather got fried. So this is one of the surviving ones, and it's my mates Steve Jones, Ollie and Andrea, and I cornered them as they were taking apart the permacultural area. So we were sitting in a yurt with no sides on it. Perhaps we were a tad close to the music, unfortunately. It's always a bit of a punt. And also, there was people wandering by and chattering. So every now and then you catch glimpses of somebody else's conversation. By and large, it does get a bit quieter and easier to hear as it goes on, though. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy a bit of an audio sample of the festival landscape from the permaculture area. And I'll be back with you in 20 minutes or so. And we're going to chat about the Fire in the Mountain Festival, permaculture, and Ollie's gigs out in Peru. Very useful that was, because it meant that Synchro actually met some people at the festival who could give a local contacts to go and see, which I think was really great. And another weird thing for Synchro was when she was hanging around by reception, by the kind of the intro tent, as it were, and a van turned up, and this little Peruvian band got out the back of the van, started playing straight away, sort of walked through the main field and into the courtyard and around the courtyard a bit, and then back to the car park and back into the van, and they disappeared again. So there were several nice, really, really nice Peruvian kind of synchronicities for Synchro, and best wishes to her. And here's Steve and Ollie talking about some of that.
Where are you, Ben?
Planet Earth, sharing some space with my permacultural buddies, most of whom actually have been on the show before, haven't you, Ollie, and Steve Jones, and Hassan, unfortunately not about.
He has had to leave, unfortunately, but it's been brilliant working with him and Dave and the Small Whale team.
They were very inspiring people to listen to.
that whole energy.
Absolutely, and then they said we'll to do an hour-long talk, and it went on for 3 hours, and screwed up our schedule, but, you know, who's complaining about that? No, it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, they really engaged the people. What's great in this is time for us, as people who run permaculture design courses and have been doing for about 10, 11 years now, is every now and again you keep re-meeting people, maybe worked with 2, 3 years ago, and they're now on a different path, such as Hassan,
yeah,
who's doing his story. But he was a nightclub bouncer in Wrexham when we met him 3.5 years ago. Looking for direction, kind of thing.
It's been a totally transformative process for him, hasn't it?
And what's great about this festival is it creates that space for people to find those connections. It's very organic, and it's very permacultural. I've not been to this festival before, so I'm just getting an impression from this weekend. But what I felt like, it's been able to evolve, and it's very sensitively sighted. Like, there's a great attention to natural space, and I'm trying to sort of, it's not a flat field here, it's a complex shape.
They're not imposing themselves on it, are they? They're very definitely accommodating the landscape,
creating kind of niches and spaces within it, with no any big single venues as well. So we've got a dispersed crowd, there's a lot of reasons to intermingle. Creates a lot of edge, a lot of different, so for me, and you know, and it's a really nice positive atmosphere, but excellent. People aren't like totally munted and you know, and so there's just the right balance of kind of whatever gaiety or whatever, but
party and discourse.
People are engaged, they're kind of to be part of it, not to spectate.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably a better way of putting it. So it makes it really easy to interact with people.
It does. And what's it been like? Because I would imagine that a permacultural setup here has kind of melded really perfectly with the venue that was awaiting it. How's it been for you?
Personally, it's been a fantastic little weekend.
Yeah.
I've got to say, just some really lovely experiences, amazing people, incredible music, just a very potent mix.
And you had the afternoons thing seemed to be going pretty well as well.
It was going really well. We had lots of kids, actually. You know, we normally have a mix of people, really, but it's just been phenomenal. Kids that have come along and met some great little creative songs. So that hopefully I've got away with some skills that they can pass on.
Yeah.
You know, I know. Yeah. So I take great pleasure in doing that.
I've really enjoyed watching the little people playing amongst the buttercups, because they're only sort of three times as high as the buttercups. In between where all the tents have been, the buttercups are still standing, and the daisies and the clover and...
I know, it's quite something, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Because it does make quite a low impact thing. And I think do you think it's interesting that there is this kind of symbiosis between the site and the festival? That the two things are...
And somehow that permeates the ethos of the festival that as well, so it's got a sense of purpose. So what really impressed me was that they reduced the ticket allocation by 500 to reduce the impact on the space, which told me, they're trying to build something long term here rather than just rinse it for a few years and make a few quid you know. It's a very, very different attitude.
In fact, I would. We had a meeting with the core crew down in Forum Space and had a talk about this. And of course, it means that we're not actually only going to be limiting our size.
We're limiting this year, revenue.
You're limiting your revenue, but we're actually having to contract the way things are at the moment. And do you know one of the weird reasons why that's happening is because of the size of tents that people have got. You know, because we turned up this year because we're crewing loads now and all of that, and we've really ragbacked our way along for 20 years on tents. But when you're doing what you're doing here and you're here for a week,
you need to be comfortable.
All of that. So we've got a 4-meter bell tent. The sands.
Hello.
Year, go over there. There were vans, three rows of vans packed in all the way from the Starling family camping, right the way up to the box office.
Mm. Don't think that's
and that's, I reckon that's easily half as many again as there were last year. So, and that of course impacts us because they're all coming with cooking facilities and bedding and all of that. So there's a kind of commercial impact as well as limiting space.
Right, yeah, it's double whammy actually.
Yeah, indeed, it's an interesting challenge. Yeah. Isn't it? One that I look forward to hearing. Does anything spring to mind?
Well, I mean, because you never define what a camping space is, normally, you know.
They don't know.
And ultimately, that might be something to be thought about.
Yeah.
You know, you actually get us
a certain amount of camp
tickets.
That's it.
And even then, everybody's now got those pod tents that turn into like semi-detached
houses. Trailer tents. They're like palaces.
Yeah.
You turn up with a trailer and you end up with something like four times the footprint of the actual trailer.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting challenge because we can't get any bigger.
Yeah. And
Tree houses, that's what we need. We did the parking on the first day last year when there wasn't, you know, and we were told that people would, they'd rather people didn't put awnings up.
Yeah.
But then people arrive in a van and they go, but everything in the van goes in the awning. If we don't put the awning up, there's no room for us.
Yeah.
But they are the willow pods down the river.
Yeah.
You know, just many more of those.
We need to, I think, drive it a little bit more naturally because it's not just a matter of the cost and the footprint. It's more a matter of the fact that you're actually making it necessary for us to reduce the number of tickets available.
Which I think, to be perfectly honest, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a perfect thing. But it's actually much, you know, you look at like within that structure then, you know, how you do maximise some of the things that you are you are offering, you know, so it's just about not working harder or making it bigger, it's just being smarter.
It's interesting though that the same number of people are taking up more and more space each year though.
That's the thing, isn't it?
And then they're more self contained so that they're spending less money, which has an impact, right? It has a double impact.
So then that comes into the conversation that the organisers have with the people who are coming to the festival.
Yes.
And being clear about, you know, actually support the people that are here, because actually what it's about is, you know, the giving and receiving, do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's great to be self-sufficient, but then the thing is, if people are doing that to save money, then you've got to look at what people are charging on the vending stalls.
Yeah.
Because it's too expensive for people, and that's the reason why people aren't buying it.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got reasonable food that's being served, you know, I mean, £6 for a plate of food, that was really good value.
Yeah.
Promote that more, you know, and make people understand that actually that's the service that is there.
I think that's a very valuable idea, because we did, before the festival, they were getting a bit of challenge about the ticket price, and the response to that was to publish the entire budget.
Totally.
So there you go, every single individual tent, every single store, that's what we're spending the money on. If you think you can do any better, well, come and join us anyway.
Well, this is what you're doing with your Roots project, isn't it? That transparency so people can see exactly what it is, because there is such a hidden sort of part of it really that nobody does see and nobody even thinks about. You know, they're coming just to have a festival.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's so much that goes into organising events like this.
Yeah.
You know? And for a long time, you know, and it's like, boom, and then it's all over.
Yeah.
And then it's like, wow.
That's it.
Okay. So, you know, but this is just, I mean, for me personally, I don't know, I wouldn't want to end the organ change of thing.
The thing is that it does change. One of the beauties of it is that it does change because of its management structure and all of that. I've watched it the last 5 years and I've seen the challenges. In the first 2 years, the challenges on the catering were awesome because they really wanted to feed people out of the central barn, and we all know that's a great idea.
In practice, it's really,
if you have 1,000 people and some of them are crew and can only eat, you know, and all of that. And we've seen them adapt to those things, and every major problem I've spotted as crew over the years has been addressed by the following year. And now this year they've democratised the whole information system. So we have a core crew emailing system and an intranet which has got, everybody's got a tab on this big spreadsheet that is the festival.
Yeah.
so we can see not only what we're doing but what other people are doing. It tracks like what it'll do to the main budget, and that was created because there was so much stress. It was getting very stressful.
Yeah,
like
balancing between the different areas and
well,
different
suddenly
priorities.
You can, if you've got a challenge in your own area, you can just float this little origami boat, you know, and
see how
everybody will see it, and somebody will guide it safely to port.
Yeah,
you know. So
it's all about communication, isn't it?
It's all about communication.
Like you said, it's communicating with people who are coming, you know, they're buying tickets. And
So, Ollie, how are you making stuff like this? Because I know from industry that actually making something visible to people makes a difference to the way they work it.
Yeah.
We used to have to pick a number of kits that were going to be assembled, and we were always falling behind until I put a target line on a graph and then a kind of blue line that showed what we were doing. And straight away, the blue line went above the red line, and we never had a problem with it again.
Yeah.
It seems to me to be a really basic thing that we don't notice, is that, that making sure people understand what's been done and what's worked before, and how we're using the stuff you're giving to us. What are you doing with that kind of info?
As far as the visibility of the Roots project, or well, I mean, if we're just talking about this festival here, you know, where we're just kind of, you know, it was, I think it was, it was a good positioning, you know, more or less, you know, although the path wasn't clear and there's lots of ropes kind of going across, but I think the people that were meant to turn up, turned up, and we had some really good connections and some new friends and some great contacts for the future, so, but yeah, I mean, we're kind of in the process of just developing the, kind of branding and really kind of what we're all about. Like, we've kind of been refining the vision for the Roots Project now over the past like kind of year, and now we've kind of really got a much clearer vision of what we're representing and who we are and what we're contributing towards, and actually having the physical projects in Peru.
And part of that's the transparent pricing system as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we're just kind of structuring everything, so it's literally it's fair share, and it's, we're dividing things into thirds most of the time. So it's the price that we paid for the product would be a third of the overall cost. So then we would then add a third. So you can imagine the cost. If we buy something for £30, then we'd sell it for £90, and we'd wholesale at £60.
Yeah.
And we'd, so everyone involved would get the equal share. What we do, 20% of that, then goes to.
Shall I see you again?
Goes to Peru. Okay, see you, Brian.
It's a nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and there's just been new and interesting ways that we've been exploring on how people can contribute to the project as well. You know, there's this really interesting idea of the dynamic equity share that's come up lately, where it's, again, it's this transparency, so people can kind of come and help and contribute to the project, whether that's with time, with ideas, with contacts, with physical kind of stationery or equipment, or with just generating kind of sales or contacts or whatever that might be. And that's all kind of put through a calculation system and then divided based upon the level of contribution and what comes from that.
That's very interesting, because it seems to me that one of the most important things we need to do is to identify and utilize the many alternatives that we've got to money in terms of exchange.
Yeah.
So it means that, it sounds like it means that people can come to your project and they don't need to have capital, they've got skills.
Yeah, they can contribute in any way. And then it feeds back, you know, the surplus feeds back into the project, it feeds back to the people that are involved in the project, it feeds back to the communities. And yeah, you know, and the whole thing's calculated on a month-to-month basis, so people can just come and leave as they please, and there's no obligation for long-term involvement. And what it avoids on that sense is the potential animosity that can arise with fixed percentages over years. You know, if I, you know, we're working together, we go 50-50, and perhaps I don't show up to work and I don't pull my weight, and you're kind of, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And it, you know, it brings up these potentially interesting kind of conversations, and it kind of, with this, it's you get out what you put in, you reap what you sow.
It also means that the kind of the input is in some sense completely related to the output.
Yeah.
The amount of activity you're putting in and stuff is going to result in a lot more input of one sort or another.
Definitely.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
So what would you, having spent a year or so now settling on it, what do you think your basic mission statement You're still working on that.
It's a really, really good question, though. It's how to summarise what you do very succinctly without just sounding like whatever, some empty slogan.
I have a technique.
Sat in a tent for a weekend with people coming up to you, what's permaculture? What's this? You really, it is a good practice.
It is. What I like to do is take bits of prose that I really love, that I read when they make my hair stand on end, and I remember them and read them again and again.
Yeah.
And I always loved, even as a real small people person at school, I loved Tracy, where they give you 500 words and say, we want you to come this with 125. And the programme for the forum, I asked everybody who was going to come to send me some stuff on what they were doing. Some people send me a page and a half, and some people send me just a little paragraph. And what I did was just, ultimately, what I was doing was redacting everything apart from two dozen words like that. Yeah. And I love it, you know, because if you really do explore your ideas and stuff, then you can kind of filter them down. And the real beauty of it is that in the end, you can end up genuinely with a sentence or half a sentence that slips underneath people's slide response before they've had time to turn themselves off to what you're saying. It's bloody in there.
Yeah.
Spellbinding.
I was going to say spelling.
Spelling. Because you're still working in Peru and then.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like interweaving the two cultures. So we're really, in essence, we're generating platforms for like the mutually beneficial interchange of energies and ideas and knowledge and wisdom between indigenous communities all over the world, really. We've been focusing, starting with Peru, but we've just started a new project in Gabon with the Bwiti tradition as part of a music project that we're developing. So we're really kind of helping to create platforms to help funnel energy through the sale of textiles, art, music, and medicines.
Sounds like Fire in the Mountain might be an ideal place for a bit of focalising of that sort of stuff.
Definitely.
A bit of music, cross-culturalisation of the music, and because they'd be all of that would be really welcome here.
Definitely,
people from other places with other things, because it's kind of what it's about. It's the festival should be what people bring to it.
Definitely. I think it's also this extended networks of people, you know, with there's not huge amounts of people that know, you know, on a bigger scale about Fire in the Mountain. So I think you have these you have these groups of people, you know, and everybody's a friend of a friend of a friend, you know. So, you know, automatically you've got this like-minded, same page kind of feeling, you know, and there's a trust there in that, and I think it's been a really beautiful.
I think ultimately that's the way it needs. It's the way it needs to go as well, because the more people who come here who feel like that, loads of the traders here, the food and the little markets and other things, like the very construct of this tent and the stage, have arisen from people who've been crewing at Fire in the Mountain, have come up with a business idea, which has then manifested in the festival, and sometimes they move on and something else has to come and take their place. But obviously the more people we have coming here and developing that sort of self-help kind of, you know, creating new things, the less things we have to pay for on the way in. And the same thing with your Roots project and bringing in new music and all of that comes because it is what we are, and that makes this a marketplace for us.
It's also about participation. The majority of people are doing something, you know, and I think it's about involving people, and that's the key to really a transformational gathering, isn't it?
If you end up with 1,600 people who are all doing something.
Yeah, for sure. Or just, you know, they're involved in some way. There's something.
The way that you set it up, you've got 500 crew and 1,000 punters, but they're not really punters, because that's one third of your people here are already involved, which makes it a lot easier for everybody else to feel involved, and then they don't feel like punters anymore. They feel like they're part of it, and they take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
So it is the participation is it's within the ethos of the festival. So
yes.
And I guess the challenge.
Real pleasure, my dear, spending more time in the field with you. Yes. It can all, that's one of the things that, you know, I'll close with Steve, is I think that your presence here could really change the health, the way the whole thing develops itself. It must be up there.
It did cross our mind, and when they got in touch with us, they said we'd do some permaculture tour.
Yeah.
And I did kind of say, look, permaculture is something which you do rather than talk about. So if it's not reflected in the ethos of the festival, then we're not really interested. I didn't know about the festival at that point.
Right.
But now I do, and I get it, you know, and it's the right place for it to be.
Don't you think it could be really exciting for you and your crew, actually, because obviously it's a grand opportunity, isn't it, this beautiful old place?
And do you know what it feels? I mean, like, I didn't realise I knew Andy and Mel until like a week before the festival, really.
Yeah.
And then it put two and two together, and I'm like, oh, wow. And it does feel like there's just, there's other connections there that make it a very solid base in it, I think.
I think that is really it's a lesson that I keep taking from things, is that this is all a vehicle, and what it's a vehicle for is the meeting of the people.
Absolutely.
And the same is true of all the workshops, all the design courses, all the festivals, all of it. What it's all about is people meeting other people.
There's some interesting change makers here this weekend, for sure. You know,
I think we stand
by the fact with marketing, you know, you get to a certain few people within, you know, circles, and your ideas are out there. You know, it's really interesting how it happens.
Yeah.
So there could be some really good stuff.
Totally brilliant. Well, thank you very much, all of you, for being here and for talking on that.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
so journey.
I might be back to spend the
weekend. We're going out this Thursday.
Yes, and
do all that sort of stuff.
And
thanks
for part of it.
Same old humdrum, and the TV will not believe me. I'm sitting here twiddling my thumb, But I'd rather be listening to pots and pans or the solitary sound of a one-man band. Yeah, there's too much junk on the radio, too much trash on TV. Man's got the antidote right here. Yeah, well, I'm getting fatigued with all these frequencies churning out the same old tunes, and I feel patronized by what is advertised telling me what to consume. Well, I'd rather be listening to pots and pans or the solitary sound of a one-man band. There's too much junk on the radio, too much trash on TV. Propaganda,
yes sir,
mixed up with a whole lot of lies and dirty slander. I'm gonna turn off my TV and my radio and form my own opinions from what I know now. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of decent songs. It all just depends on what station you choose. And when it comes to TV, I know you won't believe me, but I'm probably telling more truth than the news. Well, I'd rather be listening to pots and pans or the solitary sound of a one-man band. Yeah, there's too much junk on the radio, too much trash on TV.
T-Bad Orchestra and Junk on the Radio from their album Talk About the Weather. That's the one, and they've done two albums. Every single track is as good as that one, and what's more, every single track is as good on stage as it is on the album. They are awesome. And I did cheat there. They weren't on at the festival this year. They were on there last year. But I couldn't resist a bit of Rob Heron whilst the doctor's away. Not playing any Motorhead. And before that, there was another tune from the Buffalo Skinners, You Make Your Own Life Hard. Worth thinking about that one. And that's off their second album, which was called The Other 9 to 5. And The Other 9 to 5, ladies and gentlemen, is what I've been talking about tonight. That's the kind of 9 to 5 I want to be doing. It was a real crack. I think some of the really the key challenges, you heard me say, and it's something that is absolutely, I believe to be absolutely true, that putting on a party like this is seriously challenging, especially if you're doing it a long way from home, which most of these people are. And the challenges that have arisen have been kind of noticeable, at crew level, but I suspect they're not so apparent to people who are kind of buying tickets. But as an ex-logistics and management dude before I abandoned ship, I've seen all of the things, and the really major challenges get dealt with, really. And I think that that process is going to be a lot easier now that we have, like I say, this kind of this holocratics, this flat a holarchy rather than a hierarchy. Nonetheless, it's clear, I think, from the discussion, especially the bits with Andrea, where our problems lie, or where our challenges are going to lie as we move forward and try to continue doing this. She pointed out, I think quite correctly, that that what the traders charge is important, because we now have a lot of people turning up who are equipped to cook for themselves. And if what the traders are charging is too much, then more people are going to bring stuff to cook on, which I think is really fair enough. The trouble is that because of the state of the economic system, which thankfully I'm sure you'll agree we don't have time to go into at the moment, that is exactly how costs rise faster than you can afford to put up your ticket prices and your beer or whatever it is, wherever it is that you're making money. And it mostly does tend to be tickets and beer, probably actually mostly beer if the truth be told. And that means we are going to be constantly having to reach towards new ways of doing things that somehow put value on other things than money. And it's already doing a lot of that. And we heard Ollie talking about his own scheme to ensure that anybody who's got anything to offer, it's as good as money, if you like. The thing is, as the predatory system becomes ever more predatory, we're going to have to learn how to provide more of the services that we're currently having to buy for ourselves. And that's going to be really interesting. I mean, ultimately, I guess, there's no reason why everybody who comes doesn't, you know, bring something with them to do. The festival forms itself around whatever it is that turns up, and everybody pays, say, 35 quid. I mean, I don't know how it would balance in terms of what the actual money would have to be. But as Andrea said, actually very few people round and about, even locally, actually know about Fire in the Mountain. It's one of the best kept miracles of the modern world, I think. The other thing is the business with the vans. Last year when we were trying to deal with the camping at the very beginning of it, and van parking and all of that, it was extremely difficult because people need their space, really. And this year that end of things was handed over to security, who are actually really, really brilliant at dealing with these things. And so I did notice that none of the vans had awnings up, which was something that we found, although we tried really hard, we found it actually impossible to impose our will on people living in vans and caravans, who are basically a little less compliant than people who don't, in my experience. Anyway, this year that was sorted out great, which is just as well, because there was shed loads of vans. I couldn't believe it. And finding my way around in the dark without a torch, as I like to do, I discovered that they basically did run all the way from the kind of top of the slope down to the family camping that we saw in the photos, right the way up to the entrance, more or less, and in three rows. So, plus the fact there's a lot bigger tents. If you go back and look at the pictures, you'll see that a lot of the tents, we were looking at the family camping, but a lot of the tents are really quite large. And again, if we were to start saying, oh, well, you know, this is how much camping space we're allotting, then effectively we'd be trying to kind of charge more for one thing than another, which, as we know, isn't going to go. We know people don't even want to pay a fiver to get into a talk, you know. So that's another very interesting challenge. It seems to me that we have a kind of critical mass of people that we need to turn up. It would be great to encourage them to participate and spend some of their meaningless promissory tokens at the festival, because a lot of work and effort and money goes into doing that. And I think the point probably is that things like the food that's coming out of that central food hall is really great. There's plenty of it. And because it's being produced in a substantial quantity, and because people are planning, obviously, really, really accurately well in advance on what they're going to do, it is actually, almost by definition, I would suspect, a really cheap way of doing it. Cost-effective rather than cheap. That what you get is a really good plate full of really good food at a reasonable price. One way or another, though, these are the challenges that are rising for us. You know, the stuff that's been dealt with by this just totally most amazing of crews over the years shows that, seems to me, that they're capable of performing the impossible. And I'm just totally, totally grateful to have been part of it. And whilst I'm at it, I'd actually really like to thank Jay for coming down and helping us, our move-in and move-out volunteer, and also providing support during the festival. Because Jay, of course, is the hostess sitting in the kitchen just on the other side of this wall with the kitchen posse. So she's the lady who also aids our broadcast and generally supports us in loads of different ways. But it was great to have you as crew. Great to be with everybody else as well. Just give it a go, guys. If there's any way you can do it, it's, as I say, it's not just Fire in the Mountain. There's many other small festivals that are also really great, but Fire in the Mountain is really something special. And the thing is, you get more stuff. You get stuff that is worth so much more than money from it. Every day, every half a day, several times a day, you're meeting people and getting things out of it, and that are just totally priceless. So hopefully we'll be talking to some of the people that came and spoke to us in the forum. I'm about running out of time because I'm going to cheat again. I'm going to play a Kidnap Alice track, because if it wasn't for the fact that I saw Kidnap Alice at the Secret Garden Party, which was otherwise a total nightmare for me, by and large, we wouldn't have got their CD, and Jess wouldn't have mentioned to a lady she was on a bus with in Mexico that we particularly like Kidnap Alice, and that lady wouldn't have said, oh really, my nephew's in that band, they have a festival out in West Wales every year, and we wouldn't have ended up crewing there. So I'm eternally grateful to Kidnap Alice for introducing me to the Fire in the Mountain, and to introducing me to bluegrass, and hence to all the other music that I've been playing you this evening. I will be back with you next week. I'm really grateful for all the feedback in the chat box. Really grateful to everything, everywhere, at the moment. I'm no doubt normal service will be resumed by next week. So here's Kidnap Alice, and then we're going to sign out with Screaming Miss Jackson again, because I think they're really ace. And they're going to be playing Was I Drunk, because most of us were at some stage during the weekend. And at the very end of it, do stay on for the very last minute, because I've put in just a little excerpt recorded on the voice recorder that we were chatting about in the chat box just now, of the crew in the crew party singing together and cheering a successful venture. And the whole thing finishes with the Tan Unamunith fairies magically closing the gates for another year. So I'm going to go and weep into my pint of beer, because I've got to wait for another year. And here's Kidnap Alice. See you soon. Thanks for being there, guys.
I have known the dusk until the dawn, sat me down with the wild ones born, stargazing until the day has come, walk back down the hill and many as one. We'll walk together then, the many as one. We'll be right back.
sweet young thing of 16. Thought I stepped out one night. I longed to get a thrill in the life I missed. Well, I met a youth, a little old dude. Although he seemed alright, I knew him by the moment when we kissed. Then I
baby, if I was, am I still? Do I care? No, don't.